Welcome to another episode of the Record of Lodoss War OVA Rewatch Podcast. My name is Alan.
And my name is Kate. We run ReverseThieves.com. That's where you can find all of our other podcasts as well as blog posts every week.
And if you have any comments about the podcast or your memories of Lodoss War, you can contact us on Twitter. My name is HisuiRT.
I'm NarutakiRT, and we also have ReverseThieves on Twitter.
And if you just want to send us an email or maybe an audio file that we can play, you can send it to ReverseThieves@gmail.com. Welcome to Lodoss Island. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss the plot of the episode.
This is episode number 11, The Wizard's Ambition. And we start with Cashew's castle is celebrating his return by watching Deedlet sleep by the fire.
Well, apparently everybody else is out celebrating, feeling all right. Apparently Deedlet got tired and by the wine glass next to her, maybe a little tipsy, and passes out so we can get like a sleeping Deedlet shot. It isn't too cheesecakey, but it's, you know, it's definitely there for reasons.
And Parn has his one romantic gesture. He finally got the message that he is supposed to be a romantic lead. Leaves her a flower and also gets shiny eyes for her, which he has not shown on anyone except Cashew up to this point. So,
real love.
Like, total improvement. And I think at the time in here when he does talk to Cashew, he doesn't have the shiny eyes anymore. So he's moved on, is basically how I read that. And we also see Ashram appear. He wakes up seemingly unharmed in a ravine. And Carla appears and talks really cryptically to him about Wagnard's plans for the continent and whether or not Ashram has the power to thwart him. And pushes his buttons a little bit to get him to at least go and be a rival to whatever's going on in Marmo.
And it turns about back on Lodoss proper. After the celebration has died down, everybody in Lodoss proper realizes that even though they beat Shooting Star, and in general, Marmo has seemingly retreated, any retreat is now gone, and Marmo is actually even more active than before. And now that they know that they have the Scepter of Domination, Cashew is like, we've got to get everybody who still has anything close to an army and get at Marmo because they still have a lot of power. And now they have one of the most dangerous artifacts in the world in their possession.
And then we see Wagnard's evil plans start to come to fruition. And the second half of this episode, we see him maybe summon Cardis. I don't know. It looked like the animation budget was not here. So whatever they were trying to show us, kind of unclear.
Well, I think they need to kill Deedlet, but he was definitely channeling like an upgraded version of Cardis' power, as we see as he basically villain teleports around and his spells even get kicked up another level.
He confronts Parn and Deedlet. They have just separated from a big group, so they're basically just taken by surprise. Wagner is, of course, more powerful than he's ever been, and they don't even really know him. So Parn's like, who are you again? And on top of this huge pillar of earth that Wagner has summoned out, he fights Parn and Deedlet, and Parn's sword breaks because Parn tries to attack magic by swording it. And Deedlet gets captured, Parn gets seriously injured, and as per usual, Deedlet saves him one last time by using an elemental light spell that draws everyone to Parn so they know where he is so that he can get help before he dies, and Deedlet is whisked off by Wagnard.
And when he awakens, he sees that most of the gang, or at least all the gang that is still alive, has gathered together, and they tell him the bad news that Deedlet has been taken, that Wagnard has both her and the items he needs to resurrect Cardis. And so he's like, I'm going to run off and defeat all the bad guys by myself. This is a great plan. What could go wrong with it? But fortunately, his friends are smarter than him and like, hey, you should probably take us with you because, you know, we're smarter than you and we really don't stand a chance on your own.
And we end really with everybody focused and centered on Marmo. Everyone is heading there. And as per great dramatic final lines of the episodes, I think, like the narrator does such a great job. The last thing is, will Ashram's ambitions be realized? Like, is there enough time? He's looking out at the island of Marmo. So next time.
Leveling up. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss player and character growth.
Good job, Harn! Being a romantic lead! Bad job, Harn! Sorting magic and throwing yourself at magic with your body!
One thing I just want to touch on before we get back to Harn and his romantic thing, though I just felt we left in the summary. It wasn't super important, but I did feel that was important that Shiris overhears Parn's one romantic gesture in their little conversation, and I feel it really influences the rest of the episode because you can just kind of tell that she's like, well, if he's all into Deedlit, then I'm not interested in any of this anymore, because she's like, for the rest of the episode, she's extremely like, I don't really care. I'm going to go off on my own. And until Parn's in, like, serious danger, she's, like, just trying to break away to be kind of brokenhearted.
I don't understand why Shiris is in love with Parn. I mean, obviously, you could probably argue, like, why is Deedlit in love with Parn? But at least they've been together journeying and doing things together. I feel like Shiris shows up and is like, I'm in love with that guy.
Maybe she just likes to cut block elves. I don't know.
I'm just saying, I feel as though... I don't think that Parn and Deedlit, unless you're asking my 13-year-old self who thought they had an amazing love story, but, like, I just don't feel there's any development on Shiris's part of any interaction with Parn that, like, makes that make sense.
Kate.
Unless she really likes to say, like, she's like, oh, you're so helpless.
Okay, two things. One, I remember the moment. It's when he's fighting Orson and he throws himself at Orson the Berserker. That's like, for some reason, she gets boomy-eyed about that. And my only theory would have to be at that point, maybe also why she sticks around Orson. She really likes guys who need to be saved. Like, Orson needs to be saved because he's possessed by the Berserker, so he's always tortured. And Parn is an idiot, so he has to always be saved. Maybe she just had, like, a real Florence Nightingale complex.
Okay. I guess that is the best answer we're going to come up with for it, so. And I feel like, at this point, I don't think there's a heck of a lot for everybody else to do. We do see a little bit of development more between Slain and Lelia, because they spend this episode traveling and flirting with each other. Until they get to Parn and help save him from himself.
Hey, compared to the, hey, look, I'm on the screen and I helped heal you from Etel. That's like a world of character development. Oh, I will say one other thing. Someone here is as cold as ice! And that's Ashram after Pyrtus saves him and sacrifices herself. She sacrificed herself for their love. He just, after Carla gives him that speech, he leaves her necklace behind.
I feel as though he's clearly just manipulated, and he did, I mean, I don't know if we could really argue that he's cold, because he was basically like, well, I'll die with you too. Oh, I'm alive. I mean, I don't think he was planning on getting out of that.
I mean, I guess I just like, you know, you have to put that in the frame or nothing, but you can throw it in your pocket. You got armor.
That's true. He didn't, I don't know why he needed, well, yeah, Carla goads him into like, you fool, you were so taken in by this elf that you're dumb. I mean, Carla is good at manipulating people.
Coldly.
We have the development of Wagnard getting vampire teeth, I think. I just wrote that down because I didn't remember that being the case. And then in other scenes, he does not have them. So maybe there was just an overzealous animator on a few cells. And he gets, obviously we said, he gets a lot more powerful in this episode. He kills his minion by accident? Not sure.
You know, it's not really clear that that dude is dead. I mean, he probably is. He probably got vaporized by that lightning travel spell. But it's really weirdly, like, he's just like, ah! I mean, like, is it because the power is so powerful and bright, or because you're being vaporized?
No money. No money.
Sword World Supplements. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss fantasy and RPG tropes and elements.
So I think the episode ends with a pretty iconic moment where Parn's sword has been destroyed in this episode. And that was also actually his father's sword, and it was very meaningful. But he is given the King Fawn's sword, this legendary sword that is supposed to be the twin sword to Beld's cursed sword, which now Ashram has. So it's finally passed along to Parn at the end of the episode.
Yeah, and apparently Ashram has also mastered Soul Drinker, which, like, when did that happen?
I thought that just didn't make sense, but I guess they just needed that to happen, because if he had slain Shooting Star or something, I feel that would be warranted. But considering that he just got chastised for dying with his girlfriend, I'm not sure how that translated into powering the sword. Or maybe that's how it did. It was like, death! I mean, it does like death, so maybe that somehow...
Okay, when in Mage the Ascension, when you get put into the Uthanos, you have to, die for a short amount of time. So, well, clearly that's how it is. There are a lot of, actual, magical traditions where you have to die, at least temporarily, to gain death powers, so you're not entirely off base with that joke. I will say, I just want to mention that I was like, hey, I know all the spells that Ragnar's casting in this battle. Like, the spell where he puts up the big stone pillar, that's a wall of stone. I mean, it's really high level for the amount of stone that he gets, but... you know, wall of stone nonetheless. Bunch of lightning spells, teleport spells, pretty common. Once again, just at really high levels. And everybody's favorite, Sphere of Annihilation, which is the spell. You cast it and it creates the slow-moving sphere, but anything it touches, it has to make a saving throw. If it fails, it just dies. And if they succeed, then you just take, 4d10 damage. So you either die or take a huge amount of damage, even if you don't die. But, once again, it's a slow-moving sphere. So usually, you either use it, on a huge battlefield where it's just got so many targets that'll kill a bunch of people. Or you use it, in tight corridors or something where people don't have a lot of room to dodge. You don't usually... casually sending it drifting over to someone on a large plateau where they could just easily move to the side. Only an idiot would fall for that.
Oh, thank God Parn does not know how to dodge. I don't think he has ever done so. So he just throws himself bodily at this. Oh, no, that's what he breaks his sword on. So he tries to chop it with a sword. That breaks it. And then later... after the sphere captures Deedlit, so I'm pretty sure that's not how that spell works. They combined it with something else.
It's not the things from the prisoner that bubble you away.
And then Parn just throws himself directly at it and basically almost dies. So I think it's definitely what you're talking about. And what about the spell where it had all the threads? Where he was trying to spell?
There's like spider webs and stuff like that. Yeah, there's a bunch of them, like entanglement spells. These are usually druid spells when push comes to shove. But you know, probably got some cleric spells, some druid spells in there, thanks to Carter's power. You know, he can multi-class now.
He's dipping in all the different pools. Makes sense.
I will say, they seem to be upping the parallels between Parn and Ashram, especially in this episode. They both now have inherited their, you know, mentor or leader's weapons. You know, one is the dark sword, one is the light sword, and they're going to confront each other again. And they both died while their love interest was trying to defend them and then been brought back by their allies. They're both kind of driven by, like, blind revenge to head towards this thing. Both of them were clearly only really good at charging that stuff. So I feel like for people who just kind of start out randomly and, like, have had a little confrontation and maybe a little bit of a rivalry, they're really trying to parallel them, especially in this episode, which I think is a classic. The hero and the villain kind of take a similar path. Only one is the dark reflection of the other.
That's a nice way of putting it. I do think it's also probably a trope to totally fake us out that the villain is dead. Ashram died at the end of the previous episode and seemed pretty dead, but we didn't see a body. Just the classic, even if you do see a body. Oh, wait, I'm thinking of soap operas. But yeah, so I feel like him coming back was very tropey. And I wanted to get back just a minute to spells, because we did see Deedlit use a lot of spells in this episode, which we've commented on before, that sort of her spell casting is up and down. Sometimes she uses it, and sometimes we don't see it for a few episodes. So she used Undyne in this episode, and then she used whatever that elemental light spell, which we've never seen her use before. Oh, wait, did she use that in the caverns? Because
yes,
they lit up. I think it was an extreme version of that, but she did use that before.
It is good just to remind us that she has all those elemental spells. And
that's why they're kidnapping her.
Because it also to remind you that her spells are different from most of the people you've seen casting spells. Everybody else has been using generally wizard spells, and she's using elemental spells. Just that, you know, especially since they make a big point that really only a high elf can resurrect her, and most of the high elves are back in hiding, back with high elves are. She's really the only one traveling around, so they can't just casually kidnap a high elf.
Cardis really should have thought this through. I mean, she could have picked something easier to find to resurrect her.
I think all the, if I remember the lore of Lodos, I think all the high elves are hiding, or not hiding out, are just living back on the main continent. So they just sent some jerk on a boat for a week or two. They can just, you know, randomly pick up a high elf. It's just Lodos that doesn't have a lot of high elves. And it's a bad neighborhood, so it makes sense why they wouldn't want to live there.
But I don't think that, I mean, beyond just being very powerful, I don't think they ever really explain why that's the cat. Maybe that isn't the only catalyst. It's just a very convenient catalyst to resurrect Cardis. I feel like there's never really explained.
And somebody we've been watching with has brought this up, but I think it's also worth noting that for all the crazy-go-nuts powers of the Scepter of Domination, it's just kind of there as a MacGuffin, like, who created this? Because this seems wacky powerful. Like, everybody is, like, hinting, hey, it might even be able to control Cardis if you, like, you use it correctly. And you're like, so, just a random item that can control possibly even the gods was just hanging out and shooting stars treasury.
Well, to be fair, I feel like shooting star is a pretty good watchdog for an item of extreme power.
I guess I'm just curious, who the fudge made this thing?
Oh, yeah.
And why is it just hanging out in the Lodos, even if, you know, most people are going to go, I think I'll shoot star to get it.
You know what? The answer is probably just Carla. She's like, hey, you know who will fuck with them? I'm going to make this. And it doesn't even work. Like, she's like, I just called it that.
I just typed it up.
Yeah, and I hit it there, and it doesn't even, it's nothing.
It's that she casts spells at two levels higher than you would normally cast them. And then she's just like, oh man, if this is what it does at level one, guess what it does at level 10? It only has a level one.
Yeah, I like the concept that it's just Carla doing all of it. So I'm going to go with that.
I think also, even though we mentioned in the last section, it is worth pointing out the hero tries to go off on his own because he feels responsible, but his friends cut him off and like, we know we're going to do this. We've all got to do this together. And he's like, well, shuckatash, I guess we're all in this, all one and one for all.
They didn't have to punch him in the gut to prevent him from leaving because he was already really injured, and that would have been a bad way to do it.
Hopefully, we already had to do that with Gib, so, you know.
I forgot that.
To the point where Gib was like, if you do that one more time, slain, our friendship is over. Over with an axe.
Revelations from Cardus. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss our favorite parts and final thoughts.
We kind of mentioned the budget on this episode before, but I also think that, is this the only episode where there hasn't been a battle? Because they have been trying to get them in every episode.
Well, I mean, we have the whole... I mean, it's pretty one-sided, but we do have Ragnar versus Karn.
I guess you're right. I was not thinking of that as a battle. I was thinking of that as just a...
curb stop.
Yeah, but you're right. So they did. I think they have at least stuck to doing that, although some of the animation in there was really, really funny, especially when he... shoots out the wires or the web or whatever it is. The way that it like manifests out of his staff is just really funny looking. So there's a lot of really bad mid-range shots here of a lot of weird eyes and stuff. And I guess it is a very heavily talky episode. Although there is a lot of horse animation in this episode.
Although that's really, really random. Like, sometimes it's really good. But once again, if those horses are mid-range or far away, like, especially that one where Cashew was leading his army through that valley, and everyone was, like, just cracking jokes on what that looks like. Of like, it's a giant slog. Oh, it's a river. My favorite, really, I don't know, just knock out the scene is after Shiris has overheard Parn and Deedlet's one romantic conversation and she's walking away in a huff. There's like, the only way I could put it is Inferno Cop walking animation for her. And I'm like, wow. That is like probably the cheapest walking animation I've seen in this series, and that is an accomplishment.
I think one of the highlights for me was Wagner laughing, because it was really special, you guys, and very memorable, and also gave me a really good laugh. So he's got a very hilarious villain chuckle that is kind of like a loser, like he just like, oh, this guy.
We were randomly talking, I forgot who it was, about like 90s cartoon villains and how they would have a sidekick who would be like less evil, and they would always have a weird annoying laugh that was like nowhere as good as the main villain laugh. And that just brought to mind them. That's what Ragnar is. He's like the villain with like the less good villain laugh.
I think that's perfect. Although, unfortunately, no one else has a sense of humor, good or bad, in Lodos. So I don't think anyone else has ever laughed. Dog was not a laugher.
They're all like Knuckles. They do not chuckle.
Trying to think of Carla. I don't think Carla laughs. I did also really love Carla. You know, she showed up. She messed with some heads. Also, there's a part where Ashram is like, it's you! And we all were making jokes that he was actually talking about the voice actor and not just Carla. Because, I mean, Did he recognize it as Carla, or did he recognize it as Woodchuck?
I think it was the circlet, so thereby he recognized it as Carla. I do find it interesting that, like, it was such a big revelation to the party that the circlet was Carla, whereas Ashram was like, oh, yes, the circlet, that means Carla.
Like, I should have known all along. I feel like Ashram is one of those people who would pretend to never be surprised by anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that...
But if you heard his inner monologue, you'd be like, what the hell?
Yeah, yeah. But he, on outside, cool, calm, collected.
Oh, I do actually like in this episode that, as we mentioned before, Parn finally decides, oh, I guess I should maybe... you know, pay some monochrome attention to the super beautiful woman who keeps throwing herself at me. Worth a shot.
I also love that part. I mean, as much as I was, like, making fun of it, I still am, like, totally taken in by Parn and Deedlit. So I was appreciative of, like, oh, you finally figured this out. And they were going to have a moment in the sunset, too. But then Wagner came up interrupting Cal.
Mm-hmm. Oh no, that was some like bard's tongue of like, yes, I as one of the few high elves who can activate the staff will surely be targeted by the Marmo. Immediately is targeted by the Marmo.
Well, she was previously targeted already by Pyrotess and them.
But it was like she was inviting danger by mentioning, but it should have been like clear by now. Thank you.